Good morning and welcome. You are tuned into 2SER 107.3 and it's 10 a.m. on a very exciting weekend to be talking books. You are, of course, tuned in to Final Draft, books, writing and literary culture every Saturday morning. Now, I get you for a half hour and hopefully I'm catching you in your car, with your headphones in, on the bus, walking, wherever you are, getting to Carriage Works because it is Sydney Writers Festival weekend. This is a great time to read books and love books in Sydney. And I'm heading along after the show, but to get us there, I actually have a bit of a Sydney Writers Festival show planned for you. I have got two fantastic authors coming in to share their new books, to discuss what's going on in their world, and really just help us all get ready for the festival. On the show today, I will be speaking with Meg Keneally. Amazingly, Meg has two books out at the moment. The fourth in the Montserrat series, which she writes with Tom Keneally, The Ink Stain, is one of the books we're going to be talking about. Meg also has her debut solo novel. It is called Fled. It explores, it's based on the true story of a female convict who came to Australia and the way that influenced the early colony. I'm not going to tell you more. Meg's going to tell you about that. But I also want to mention I have got Melanie Cheng coming in. Now, her first short story collection, Australia Day, won the Victorian Premier's Literary Award, and she has her debut novel out. It is called Room for a Stranger. It is an absolute joy. You know, my heart, so many things I'm feeling about this book. And Melanie will be here to discuss these books as well. They're also at the Writers Festival. So wherever you are, wherever you're going, try to get into Carriage Works today. And to get you there, Final Draft is doing its own little Sydney Writers Festival for the next half hour. Stay tuned. It's all coming up after this short break.
Head On Photo Festival is here. Get down to Paddington Town Hall and check out the festival hub. Enjoy some of the world's best photography as exhibitors showcase their stories and ideas from across the globe. The festival hub is open 7 days a week, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. from May 4th to 19th, featuring over 18 exhibitions in the precinct. And best of all, they're free. For more information about this and other festival events around Sydney, go to headon.com.au. 2SER is a proud media partner of Head On Photo Festival 2019.
You're tuned in to 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft and my name is Andrew Popel. Now, listener, we are in completely uncharted territory here because I have never had an author in to discuss two novels that they have out simultaneously. One of these novels is a collaboration. It's actually far more rock star at the moment. It's like getting Beyonce or Dave Grohl in to discuss their myriad projects. And my guest today is just as prolific. Can I introduce Meg Keneally? Meg, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
It is exciting. It, as I confessed off air, a little bit nerve-wracking. You know, we're going to be talking about two books. At the moment, you're the co-author of the Montserrat series mm-hmm. with your father, Tom. Now in its fourth adventure.
Fourth
adventure, The Ink Stain. Mm-hmm. And you also have your debut solo novel, Fled, out on shelves.
Without adult supervision.
Completely unsupervised. And just this idea of the collaboration, the solo project. Mm. This is super rock star. This is as rock star as Final Draft gets. So thank you for coming in and talking both projects. Now, of course, we have The Ink Stain and it takes us to Sydney.
It does. It
takes us to Sydney where Montserrat, a former convict turned investigator, must unearth the killer of an outspoken newspaper editor.
Yes, a newspaper editor who's been boasting about a story which is going to destroy the administration. And, of course, this being 1826 and therefore the days before personal computers, the copy that he has is the only copy that exists and he is shot and the story mysteriously disappears.
No outraged tweeting about this yet. There is no citizen journalism. Or there is, actually. That's an interesting connection.
Yes, there is. But no tweeting, sadly, except of the, you know, avian variety at this point in history.
Now, Fled, your other book, your solo book, is the story of Jenny Trelawney, and it's based on the true story of the convict Mary Bryant.
Yes, indeed.
Jenny is a highwaywoman transported to the British colony of New South Wales, rather than being hung in her home of Cornwall. Mm-hmm. So we have this overlap. We have two historical novels. We have two novels of very early Australia.
Yes.
And, I mean, I guess, let's start there. Both Fled and Ink Stain work with these periods of Australia's early history. Now, we're living through a period, it's a long period of examination around history, sometimes even characterised as a war for Australia's history. Yeah. What does writing books in this period mean for you?
Well, I'm a descendant of convicts myself, so I have an interest just in terms of my own heritage. But more than that, it is really fascinating to look under the bonnet of how we came to be where we are, to sort of pull on those threads that, you know, that have ended up taking us to our place as a society. It's also confronting as well, I have to say, because one of the things that I found not difficult, but one of the things that I wrestled with in writing Fled particularly is the fact that it's extremely painful history. For Indigenous Australians. And I didn't want to, at one stage I nearly abandoned the book because I didn't want to perpetuate the Terra Nullius myth by not representing Indigenous characters. But I was extremely worried about causing offence in the way they were represented. And Mary Bryant, the real-life convict at the centre of Fled, did know Barangaroo, and her husband knew Bennelong, and they did interact. So I did wrestle with that a lot, and I think that one of the most important discussions that's going on about our history at the moment is that colonialism isn't something that we've just drawn a line under, nothing to see here, we can all walk away and wash our hands of it. There's a segment of the population that's still living with the reverberations of the 26th of January 1788. So writing a book about that very day, was fraught. And I certainly hope I didn't offend anyone. If I did, apologies in advance.
I'm glad you brought that up, and let's talk a little bit more about that, because there are tropes, even cliches around history, that it's written by the victor, and that is, I guess, on the one hand, been true for a period where we had this sort of very white, very male-dominated writing of history.
Yeah.
And we not only got a history written by the, in scare quotes, victor, but we had a very narrow-viewed history.
Mm.
Are there responsibilities then that come with crafting a work that allows this view on the past? And did you ever feel, you've gone into that a little bit, politically or even emotionally charged with the interpretations that readers would find in the book?
Yeah, yeah. It was something that I thought a lot about, because I do feel that, especially as I said, that this is a live issue. It's not distant and dusty history. The process of reconciliation is still incomplete. So while I wanted to write a story of one woman and from one woman's perspective, and I don't really feel I have the right to tell the story of colonisation from the Indigenous perspective, particularly not when so many wonderful Indigenous writers like Claire Coleman and so on are doing it, I did want to tell this story because it's a story of female power at a time when people were powerless. But I did recognise that I was running over someone else's story as well. So I was very keen to get that right. I was able to find an elder who was willing to read it for sensitivity, which I'm very grateful for. But it's one of those things that I think is an evolving beast, the way we deal with the depiction of colonialism in fiction.
Mm. Can we get then a little into craft? Because history, it requires you to work within certain constraints, time, place, and working with an historical character, you also have the biography of their life.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about Fled, but also to an extent the Inkstain. How do you work then within a history to bring it to life with those constraints, but also the sensitivities you've mentioned?
Well, one of the constraints for me with Fled. So Fled is, as you mentioned, the story of Mary Bryant, who was a Cornish highwaywoman who was transported here, and she masterminded a plan to nick the governor's cutter, and she sailed it with her two young children, her husband and some other convicts, to West Timor, as you do, in one of the most extraordinary escapes in history. And one of the things I found challenging was that she was illiterate, so there's no record of her thoughts, her feelings, her hopes, her fears and so on. But if you're trying to get a reader engaged in a story, then you have to get inside the main character's head and know all about their hopes and fears and feelings and so on. That's why I decided to fictionalise it, the main reason why I decided to fictionalise it anyway, so that I could create a character who fully owned all of this, because it felt weird somehow to say Mary said XYZ when I have no idea whether Mary actually did. You know, so that was one of the challenges, together, as I said, with the portrayal of Indigenous people. Those were probably the two main challenges. The fact that there's so much that's not known about Mary's story, and the historical record can only take you so far. So you just have to take an educated guess and make the rest up, essentially, which is, I guess, why it's fiction. You do have to fill in the blanks with your own imagination sometimes.
You'd agree, though, that these stories are incredibly important, because in absence of the historical record is absent partly because of deficits in education of people who are poor, deficits in the education of women, and deficits in any sort of interest in listening to certain voices, particularly the voices of women. So having a way to get into those stories is so incredibly important.
Oh, absolutely it is. And as you say, there hasn't been the interest in the past. And because more women were illiterate than men, then their stories haven't risen to the surface as much as they have in the past. In fact, interestingly, the Australian Dictionary of Biography recently did a self-audit, and they found that only 4% of their entries are around women. To their huge credit, they've now put out a call for submissions on Australian historical women. But I do think we are now entering a period where there is more interest in those women's stories. And there are some amazing women in our history, just some incredible, incredible people like Mary Reby, who's on the $20 note, who was who dressed as a boy to steal a horse. She was arrested as a boy. She was tried as a boy. She was sentenced as a boy. And it was only when she was about to set off for Australia that she was examined by the surgeon, who said words to the effect of oops. And she became one of Sydney's, you know, leading business figures. She was a founder of the Bank of New South Wales, although we can't blame her for the Royal Commission. there's a woman I really want to write about, Charlotte Badger, Australia's first female pirate. There are so many of these stories not untold, but undertold, I think. And I think the more we realise, the more we talk about the female contribution to Australian history, the more we'll come to see it as a more nuanced beast and more nuanced creature with which goes beyond convictism and into something more complex.
I am speaking with Meg Keneally. We are discussing, wait for it, as I've mentioned several times, she's got two books out right now. The Montserrat series with Tom Keneally. The latest is The Inkstain. And Meg's solo novel, Fled, is also out now. Meg, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you again to Meg Keneally. This is Final Draft on 2SER 107.3 on this Sydney Writers' Festival weekend. I am going to be back with Melanie Cheng. We're going to be discussing her new novel, Room for a Stranger. But to get us there, I've got a new track from Aldous Harding. The New Zealand-born singer-songwriter is just absolutely perfect for a morning like this. This track is Weight of the Planets.
Starts to roll. We psyching me out.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and my name is Andrew Popel. Now, my guest in the studio is Melanie Cheng. Melanie is a writer and general practitioner. Her debut, the short story collection Australia Day, won the Victorian Premier's Literary Award for Fiction. She's in Sydney for the Sydney Writers Festival and has a new book, her debut novel, Room for a Stranger, out this month. Welcome to 2SER, Melanie.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in. I know it's a busy week, so I feel really fortunate, especially also because of this book. I want to tell people about it. Now, Meg Hughes is old, and she's feeling every bit of it. When her home in Melbourne suburbs is broken into, she joins a home share program so as to have some company and some protection. Andy is studying biomedicine, desperate to conceal the fact that he feels over his head and that he might even fail. When his father's cleaning business in Hong Kong begins to struggle financially, Andy must give up his apartment and find cheaper accommodation. And so we have Room for a Stranger. Now, this is a finely observed exploration of the ways that we know, or maybe the ways we fail, to know each other. But I want to start with Meg and Andy. Mm-hmm. They are these two completely compelling characters. I found myself so immensely fond, although incredibly frustrated at times at them. They're also representative of two groups that are often spoken about, but who typically don't often get a lot of voice in mainstream media. We've got international students. Andy's an international student. And also women past retirement age. Meg is someone who appears in medical statistics and is maybe pitched to or talked about as a voter group, but we don't often hear voices. Was there any sense of trying to open up these voices in Room for a Stranger?
Yeah, well, with the Short Story Collection Australia Day, that showcased, you know, a diverse range of characters. Mm. And many of those characters were people who were, as you say, talked about a lot in the media, but that we didn't hear directly from. And so when it came to writing a novel, I knew that I wanted to focus on those type of voices again, because the landscape of Australia is changing. It's changing all the time. And the ageing population in particular is, you know, increasing. And I think in 2017, it was more than 1 in 7 Australians were aged over 65, and that's only set to increase. And yet they're underrepresented in our kind of popular culture, in our books and film and TV. And so, yeah, I really wanted to centre my novel around these types of people.
It also strikes me that they're a group that, even for people who would not consider themselves the type to, and I'm going to use scare quotes liberally here, to stereotype or to be racist or do things like that, these are the group, this is, well, two groups that people would have, I think, immediate impressions of, even if they'd never met an international student or had never met a person past retirement. You think, I know what an old person's like. Mm. And I've seen the media. I know what international students are like. Was there a sense also of breaking down those ideas?
Yeah, I think that's where my work as a GP really feeds into my writing, because I before practicing as a, particularly as general practitioner, and encountering these people and meeting them as fully formed human beings rather than just, you know, a two-dimensional type of statistic or character, I would have had the same kind of prejudices and stereotypes in my mind. But once you actually talk to these people about their lives and have a better sense of, you know, who they are, it's impossible to have those prejudices and stereotypes anymore. And yeah, that's definitely one of the aims that I had in writing the book.
I think, and I'm going to go off script a little bit here, but on a well-loved and well-worn theme for me, that is a power of literature as well.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I see so many parallels between what I do, you know, in my work at the clinic and in writing. You know, we both are very much, you know, founded on empathy, and both trade in stories. And so one feeds into the other, and that's what I love about doing both.
Yeah. I want to now think a little bit about strangers and think about knowing, like how we know or think we know things. Room for a Stranger, it sets up Meg and Andy. It's almost in this stereotypical kind of odd couple situation. And we naturally, we're drawn to think of them as strangers. When we meet them, they're strangers to each other. You do challenge this conception, though, through their internal feelings, their sense of isolation, and in their relationships, such as Andy's feelings about his childhood, about his parents, trying to understand them, what that impact has had on him. What does it mean to you, though, to know someone? And what's, well, we just talked a little bit about stereotypes, but how did you want to challenge our stereotypes about how we know people through Meg and Andy?
Yeah, I think I drew a little bit on a personal experience I had when I was a medical student. I went to the US on a kind of exchange, and I stayed in a granny flat at the back of this older couple's place. And I just remember how isolated I felt. It was the middle of winter in Virginia in the US. It was, you know, I was snowed in at, you know, some points. And yeah, just being in someone else's territory, someone else's home, surrounded by somebody else's things and their memories, it just really enhances your feeling of isolation and loneliness. And that is the situation that Andy finds himself in. Not only he's in, you know, Australia, a different country, speaking a different language, he's actually in a stranger's home. And that really just magnifies his sense of how different he is and what an outsider he is, I think. And yet Meg herself, although she is in her familiar place, having an outsider suddenly live in her home changes it as well for her. So, you know, she can't just go to the kitchen and assume that, you know, she's going to be able to be comfortable and do whatever she likes. It creates this tension in the house. And that was something that I experienced, you know, when I was staying with this older couple as well.
I was really fascinated, though, with the way you play with knowing. And together, they parallel the fascinating thing, and I want to be so careful here because, as I said, these are finely drawn characters. So the idea of spoilers really comes in the way they evolve. There's, there is no reveal that it was the butler at the end. The reveal is in the way we watch them grow and grow together and grow separately. And as they come to think about each other and think about each other as strangers, they almost seem to become more intimately involved than with the people that they want to be drawn closer to in their life.
Yeah, but that's something that happens quite gradually, almost reluctantly, you know. It's not that I would say that Meg and Andy are both naturally introverted, and it is their preference to stay, you know, in their own rooms and maybe not interact with each other, just because of it's scary to do that and it's uncomfortable to do that. And yet, because of certain things that happen in the book, they are forced to interact. And actually, those are the moments that they derive a lot of meaning from in the end. But if it was left entirely up to them, I think they would probably prefer just to stay, you know, in these kind of silos, because just because it's easier. And that's what another thing I see a little bit in my practice as well, that people are very lonely, and then they're craving other people's company, but they are still afraid to reach out, and they're still afraid to take that next step. And, you know, it was really only because Andy's parents couldn't afford to keep him in his apartment anymore that he had to, you know, take up residence in Meg's house. And similarly, Meg, you know, it was only after a scary home invasion that she decided to reluctantly take in a stranger into her home as kind of a bit of security as well. So, yeah, but in the end, it does, you know, enhance their sense of what it means to be human.
I'm speaking with Melanie Cheng. She is the author of Room for a Stranger, the book that we have been talking about. Melanie, thank you so much for taking the time to come in and indulging all of the sort of piercing questions that I have of your two wonderful characters.
Thank you so much for having me.
On Now, Sydney Writers Festival brings together some of the world's leading writers and public intellectuals for a week-long celebration of literature. From in-depth panel discussions about topical issues and hands-on sessions for aspiring writers to a fun-filled family day, an all-day YA, Sydney Writers Festival is for all lovers of words. Running April 29 to May 5, tickets on sale now at swf.org.au. Sydney Writers Festival sponsors 2SER 107.3.
Yes, you are on 2SER 107.3. We're celebrating Sydney Writers Festival all weekend, but particularly on Final Draft, where books, writing, literary culture, that's our jam every week. I want to say a big thank you to Sydney Writers Festival guests who joined me today in the studio. Meg Keneally was discussing the two books she has out at the moment. One, the Montserrat series with Thomas Keneally, The Inkstain, and also her debut solo novel, which is Fled. Thank you also to Melanie Cheng, who is also here for Sydney Writers Festival. We discussed her new novel, Room for a Stranger. Now, to celebrate the festival weekend, if you are aware, or even if you're not, Final Draft is a podcast. The Final Draft Great Conversations podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. So if you're a Spotify person, if you are part of the Apple Empire, if you use Overcast, any of these podcast apps, you're going to find Final Draft Great Conversations. And we are celebrating Sydney Writers Festival with two new episodes. You can catch all of my conversation with Meg Keneally, also with Melanie Cheng, and bits that you missed, things that we talked about when we weren't on air. There is so much more to discover in these books, and it is in the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Now, I'm going to get out of here because I want to go down to the festival. Wherever you are, get to Carriage Works this weekend. One of my highlights for today, I am going to be checking out this afternoon a panel called Boys to Men, The Masculinity Crisis. Clementine Ford is going to be in conversation with Adam Liu, and they're going to be exploring what it means to be a man and how how this crisis may impact men. But, I mean, I got to go. I got to let the vultures in. My name is Andrew Popel. I'm going to say bye. I'm going